You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Under the legendary coach John Wooden, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar led the UCLA Bruins to a record of 88-2 in three national titles. And then during a 20-year career in the NBA, he won six championships and is the all-time leading scorer in league history. But Mr. Abdul-Jabbar has not limited himself to being a basketball player. He's also become an educator, best-selling author, and as of last month, he's assumed the official role of U.S. cultural ambassador. He joins us now to talk about two of his latest projects, a children's book called What Color Is My World? The Lost History of African-American Inventors. It's published by Candlewick Press, and a documentary film called On the Shoulders of Giants, the story of the greatest basketball team you never heard of. It premieres tonight on the Showtime Network at 8:30, and it brings Kareem Abdul-Jabbar to our studio today. Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
So all of this activity, was there a plan for all of these projects to come together at the same time?
No, it wasn't planned like that, but it just worked out like that. Actually, it's pretty good because they kind of relate to each other.
Well, you've been working with Native American kids. The last time you were here, we talked about that. Is your involvement with the kids what led you to write a children's book?
Well, I always felt that Black history was something that was neglected or not understood correctly. And I remember when I was a kid, the history books that we had only dealt with Black Americans with regard to the issues of slavery and civil rights. And there's so much more to the picture. So it really, I think there was a niche there that needed to have some light shown on it and detail the achievements of Black Americans away from any of the traditional things that they're associated with. I think too many young kids, especially in inner cities, they think they can only be successful if they're entertainers or athletes. And there's so much more that they could do to really impress people and make a significant contribution to American life. And I think we need to start pushing them in that direction.
Well, you've played with an awful lot of athletes who probably didn't do much other than focus on their game. But you've always been interested in education. Is this something you got from your family?
Yeah, my family really emphasized that, and they wanted me to get my degree. I could have left college early and played for the Globetrotters and made a substantial amount of money. But
as Will Chamberlain had done earlier.
Yeah, Will Chamberlain actually did exactly that. But, you know, getting my degree was important, and education has always been important. I've always been an advocate for literacy and higher education.
Well, some of the college coaches have actually encouraged that. Dean Smith kind of signed a contract with his players that even if they went into the pro game, they would still come back to school and get their degrees. But we don't hear a lot of that.
Yeah, that's not the emphasis these days. Being a professional athlete now is like a lifetime career, and there's so much money involved in it that, you know, if you get the opportunity to play, you will be a wealthy person.
And then you wind up doing color commentary later
or something.
Going on one of those shows where you got to scream a lot with all the other guys. In your case, you've chosen to focus on African-American inventors. A few of these stories I've heard before, but only a few of them. Did this require a lot of research?
Yeah, it did. Just to figure out exactly which ones that we would use, my co-author, Raymond Opsfeld, he did a great job of really sorting through everything and finding the ones that really made significant contributions. And they have to do with things that we all use and are familiar with and have no idea that Black Americans are associated with it.
So the people are surprised that African Americans are behind some of our most common and popular inventions?
Yes.
What about the kids you talked to?
The kids are all surprised. They had no idea, for example, you know, that Black man invented the ice cream scoop, for example, you know. And who doesn't like ice cream?
But also open-heart surgery.
Open-heart surgery, the blood bank and blood typing, you know, that type of thing. James West, the electric microphone, which makes it possible for us to have cell phone conversations. Lewis Latimer is always a big one for me. The light bulb, you know, making it a practical invention. Everybody wants to give Edison credit for that, when actually Lewis Latimer, who worked for Edison, is the one that invented that and figured it all out.
And you say that this has been pretty much eliminated, excluded from our history classes. Do you think that it would really matter that a bunch of kids might be excited by this kind of information and decide to go into the sciences?
I would hope so. I think that the sciences really are something that needs promotion, so that kids can get an idea of how important it is to everything that we do. You know, we don't move forward without scientists and engineers figuring out the things that they figure out and making our lives easier and more practical.
I should point out that the book also has really wonderful illustrations by Ben Booz and A.G. Ford. Did you collaborate with them?
Yeah, we did, and it's really one tragic thing. Mr. Booz passed away this past summer.
Oh, that's why A.G. Ford took over?
I don't know if he took over, but Mr. Booz was at his desk. You know, he was in his 40s, and with young kids, he passed away sitting at his desk, and it was really tragic. He had finished his work on the book, but, you know, for that to happen, he was a really good man, and sorry to see that had to happen like that.
My guest is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. We're talking about, among other things, a children's book that he's written with the help of Raymond Obstfeld called What Color Is My World? Can you tell us a bit about the circumstances surrounding your recent appointment to the role of U.S. Cultural Ambassador?
Well, I have some good friends that live in the D.C. area, Catherine and Wayne Reynolds, and they know Mrs. Clinton. And they suggested that I might be a good candidate to be a cultural ambassador. And lo and behold, I got a call.
So what are you going to have to do here? Going to have to go deal with misconceptions about this country and other countries?
Yes. Well, basically personal diplomacy, and just to go give an accurate representation of what our country is all about. I've already had one assignment to Brazil, and it was wonderful. Because people are very curious about America. They have what we would term an affirmative action program going on there in trying to include all segments of Brazilian society. The large minority, well, not really minority, Africans constitute a large segment of Brazilian society, and they traditionally were not given opportunities.
Now, basketball is popular in Brazil. In fact, yes. One of the stars of the NBA comes from Brazil. Were they aware of your past?
Yes, they were. And I was very surprised, you know, because soccer is the sport in Brazil. But basketball has made inroads, and there are a lot of kids down there that play the game. I went to some of the poor neighborhoods, and they have courts there, and the kids play. It reminded me a lot of growing up in Harlem.
Now, it's interesting that it's Hillary Clinton who's responsible for you getting this. After all, the president does play basketball.
Yes, he does.
Have you know anything about his game?
He has a pretty good game. You know, he was a good high school player, and he didn't play in college, but he stuck with it. You know, he played basketball to stay in shape throughout his lifetime, and he's still a pretty good player.
You still play at all?
No, I don't play anymore. I do a few things just to stay in shape. I jump rope and I lift weights and run and stuff just to try to maintain some physical conditioning.
But I suspect that you probably could return. There was talk about Will Chamberlain returning to basketball game in his 50s. He decided not to.
Will was always threatening to do that, but I think that was more his ego talking than a real practical consideration on his part.
Now, you also have told us that you like horseback riding.
Yes.
Can you find a horse that can handle somebody as tall as you are?
Oh, yeah. You know, I did a lot of riding. I had a thoroughbred.
Perfect. You owned a thoroughbred?
Yeah. And I used to breed Arabian horses. The taller Arab horses work just fine.
Can you tell us a bit about On the Shoulders of Giants? How this comes out of a book that you wrote, a bestseller.
Yes, I wrote a book called On Shoulders of Giants. It's about the Harlem Renaissance, and also I featured the Harlem Wrens basketball team. Their story was a lot like what, if you ever saw Ken Burns' documentary on the Negro Leagues, well, it was part of his baseball documentary. But the Wrens went through the same set of circumstances. Only thing their sport was basketball.
So this is nothing to do with the Harlem Globetrotters. These were the Harlem Globetrotters are entertainers, even though some of them are really great players. This was just really serious group of basketball players at a time when there was no real professional basketball when they were around, was there?
Yes, there was.
There was no NBA.
There wasn't an NBA, but there were professional leagues. But teams like the Globetrotters and Wrens could not play in it. And I have to apprise you of something. The Harlem Globetrotters are from Chicago.
Yes.
They're not from Harlem. Harlem's team was the Wrens. That's a common misconception.
Well, they gave themselves the name.
Or... Yeah. Yeah. They did that so that people would know that it was a black team. But the Wrens would play against all of the teams, all of the great professional teams of that era, the 1920s and 30s, and beat them, but they couldn't play in the leagues. So they would play them exhibition games. And the Wrens did some amazing things. They won 88 games in a row at one point. Just really made a great mark for themselves. Finally, in 1939, there was a tournament held in Chicago that invited all of the best teams, including the Globetrotters and Wrens. And the Wrens eventually won. They beat the Globetrotters in the semifinals and the Oshkosh All-Stars in the finals. The Oshkosh All-Stars were the reigning champs of the so-called legitimate leagues at that time.
But you weren't aware of them, I would assume, when you were growing up. Basketball had already been integrated.
Basketball had been integrated, but being raised in Harlem, the Wrens, their legacy was still part of our Harlem's culture. And people, you know, would talk about them, but I didn't find out too much about them until I was between my junior and senior year in high school, when people, you know, appraised me of, like, exactly what they had done and what they had meant to the game.
My guest is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He has written a documentary with Anna Waterhouse called On the Shoulders of Giants, the story of the greatest basketball team you never heard of, directed by Deborah Morales, and it will be premiering tonight on Showtime at 8:30. There's also a new book for kids called What Color Is My World? The Lost History of African American Inventors. He's written it with the help of Raymond Obstfeld, and it's illustrated by Ben Booz and A.J. Ford and published by Candlewick Press. And we will continue our conversation after we take a little break. We're back with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He has a number of projects in the works. He's written a children's book called What Color Is My World? The Lost History of African American Inventors. He's written it with Raymond Obstfeld, and it's published by Candlewick Press. There's also a documentary called On the Shoulders of Giants, the story of the greatest basketball team you never heard of. That is having its world premiere tonight at 8:30 on Showtime, and he wrote it with Anna Waterhouse. And there are a number of current and recent NBA players participating in that film. Were they aware of the Harlem Wrens?
They weren't. Most basketball players are not aware of anything that happened before the NBA started, and they probably aren't aware of the NBA prior to, let's say, 1980. You know, they don't know who the best players were. They couldn't tell you anything about the All-Stars from the early 50s, stuff like that. That's totally lost on them.
Although somebody like you, a Bill Russell, would have been a hero, partly because he broke so many barriers. He wasn't the first black player in the NBA, but he was probably the first superstar, wasn't he?
Yeah, and such a dominant player. And, you know, for my position, he was the guy that I used as my template for trying to learn how to play the game.
Yesterday was the anniversary of the game 52 years ago, in which Bill Russell became the first to grab at least 50 rebounds in a single game. He got 51. The record was later broken, in fact, the same year by Wilt Chamberlain at 55. And then the 50th anniversary of Wilt Chamberlain's 100-point game is coming up on March 2nd. These are all amazing. Would any of those things have been possible by the time you were in the NBA?
I don't think so. But I think that had a lot to do with Wilt's unique physical gifts. He was so much bigger and stronger than everyone else. That he told that there was nobody that could guard him. And, you know, he got those 100 points against the Knicks. Charlie Tyree was guarding him that night. Not a very, very good defensive player. So, you know, I think it was a unique situation there.
Well, there have been a lot of tall guys, but only a few have really been great. You're one of them. And that's because of other factors, I suspect. It's just because of the way, you know, you're balanced, the fact that you can run down the court, the fact that when somebody pushes you, you don't fall to the ground, as Walt Dukes and Ray Felix used to all the time.
Right. Yeah, just your own athletic ability really determines what's possible for you on the court.
Next week, we're going to have a player with the Harlem Globetrotters who is 7'8" come on the show. Now,
that's amazing.
7'8", does he even have to jump to dunk the ball, do you
think? Probably not. I would be surprised if he had to.
In the film, Charles Barkley says, "These young guys make $20 million a year, and they think they're great. They were just born at the right time."
Well, they're born at the right time to become really wealthy playing professional basketball. You know, that's just timing. Their abilities, that's another thing. I always use the baseball analogy. I mean, the players make so much money now, but could any of them hold a candle to Willie Mays?
Mm-hmm.
Or not
Babe
possible.
Ruth, these are, but right, we don't yeah. know because they are playing in different eras.
They're playing in different eras, but you know the mound is shorter now. You know it's totally different. I mean, Stan Musial, if he played now, geez,
yeah,
holy mackerel,
we'd probably have a 400 hitter again.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Well, sports used to be the great equalizer. A CEO of a company would sit next to a plumber at a game, but we're not seeing that anymore.
No,
has something been lost?
I think something has been lost. You know, the game isn't that accessible. To go to a game and get really good seats, you have to be wealthy.
Is there resentment on the part of the older NBA players, the old retired vets, about the kinds of money that people make today?
I don't know if there's any resentment. There shouldn't be. You know, these things are all about timing and the popularity of the game. You know, in the early 50s, guys were lucky to make five figures playing professional basketball. You know, and now it's very common for guys to make eight figures playing professional basketball in 1 year. And the difference in the currency, you know, the dollar isn't what it was. So
But still, some of those players are making. I think Bill Russell made $26,000 in his early glory days.
Exactly. it's interesting, you know, just that there are a whole lot of factors that play on this.
A listener, Andrew, asks if I will ask you about how true the story is that practicing yoga extended your career.
Practicing yoga definitely extended my career. It's really great preventative maintenance, and you know, your flexibility really is part of your athletic ability. And if you're not flexible, you get injured a lot easier than someone who is flexible.
Mm-hmm. So, do other athletes also do yoga, or were you considered a bit of an oddball at the time? I'm sure Phil Jackson later, when he came to the Lakers, talked about that kind of thing.
I definitely, people thought I was a little out there, you know, stretching the way I did. But the stretching I did was from my martial arts, but it was fundamental, and it really helped me. And then later on, I got into yoga, and it absolutely enhanced my career and my ability to play the game well.
We've been getting questions from our listeners. One wants to know, a basketball question, in your 20 years in the NBA, what player was your toughest opponent? Was there anyone?
Geez, I was able to score on everybody, but the guy who played me the toughest was a guy named Nate Thurmond. He played for the Warriors in San Francisco and later Oakland. And he was a great defensive player. A whole lot of people would beat on me and say they played good defense, but Nate actually, he had the skills.
You had a wonderful hook shot, and it was almost something that nobody could defend against. Why do you think we're not seeing very much of that today, or if at all?
I think that it's just fallen out of favor, and coaches don't know how to show young players how to shoot it. If you just took the time and showed them the footwork and the mechanics of it, it wouldn't take any longer than master than a jump shot. But players don't understand how to play with their back to the basket, get close to the basket, and shoot a hook shot. And it's just fallen out of favor. The jump shot is the shot everybody wants to shoot.
Although it was almost a guaranteed 2 points each time, so you'd think that somebody would say, hey, you know, Kareem did it. Why don't I try it?
They just need somebody to show it to them. I mean, I always explain to people, everybody talks about Michael Jordan and what an extraordinary athlete he was. But, you know, his lifetime shooting percentage was under 50%. My lifetime shooting percentage was over 55%. You know, if I shot the ball, you could expect it to go in, percentage-wise.
And sure, you had the advantage of height, but there have been a lot of tall players, and they all didn't have 55% shooting percentages.
Exactly.
So are you still in love with the game?
Well, you know, the game has been great to me. It'll always be part of me. But, you know, I'm doing other things now, and that's why, you know, writing and being involved in movie making, it really appeals to me, and I'm happy to have these things happening.
Because to some degree, you've switched over to becoming an educator. You feel that there are a number of stories that are, well, obviously the two things that we've been talking about are stories that you felt weren't told or weren't told enough, and you want to write that, we want to address that situation.
Yeah, it's important to me. I think that young people really need to have an understanding of their history. And, you know, young black kids, I think, really suffer from not having enough variety of role models.
Now, another listener says that they heard you might have done some ballet as well.
No ballet.
You'd think that with the connection, the similarity between some of the things that you do in basketball and ballet, that players would want to study it.
Oh, yeah.
Like hang time.
Absolutely, and you know, Lynn Swann, the great wide receiver for the Pittsburgh Steelers, he studied dance, and that was his fundamental athletic training, and it served him very well.
And I always thought Elgin Baylor would have been one of the greatest ballet dancers that ever lived.
Elgin had
guy could jump.
He was poetry in motion, absolutely.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's written with the help of Raymond Obstfeld, What Color Is My World? The Lost History of African American Inventors. It's published by Candlewick Press. There's also a documentary called On the Shoulders of Giants, the story of the greatest basketball team you never heard of, the Harlem Wrens. And he wrote that with Anna Waterhouse. It's directed by Deborah Morales, and it premieres tonight on the Showtime channel at 8:30, all of which has brought him to our show. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, it was a pleasure. Thanks for having me. It was great talking with you.